Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Hey, good evening. Thanks for being with us on this solstice, which we'll be talking about in just a minute. My guest this evening is Chick Weatherby, who is a fascinating guy. He's a master herbalist, naturopath, and a shaman, and we will have an interesting time finding out about what he does, but also how he got there, because he took an interesting route. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And the obvious thing to talk about tonight is the solstice, a very important transition in the year. And in the Northern Hemisphere, where I live, the winter solstice means that we have the longest night, the longest period of the day that has no sun, and the shortest daytime. And the sun is hanging as low as it ever gets in the southern horizon. And there's something about it that most people don't know about, which is it's not only that the sun gets to its lowest point, it actually stays there and doesn't move. The days don't get longer immediately. It doesn't move for 3 days. And every culture all over the world in every spiritual tradition has come up with a celebration, a story, rituals about what that means, what the symbolism is. So for Christians in Western cultures, the story is about Jesus being born on that day, and how they were people that had no place to stay. They were in a barn, and the baby was born in a stall in the barn. But they were taken care of by various people that showed up, including the three wise men, the three magicians, the three shamans, who heard about or somehow intuited that this was happening and found the child. Might be a good lesson for the Republicans, since these were needy people who were taken care of, and that doesn't seem to be what they do. But enough politics. Interestingly enough, in other traditions, well, the other thing is that most of the things that we do to celebrate Christmas are pre-Christian. So the colors red and green, the Yule log, the bringing of an evergreen tree into the house and decorating it, lighting candles, giving gifts, all of those things are rituals from pagan traditions that predate Christianity by, I don't know exactly, but thousands of years. And they come from cultures all over Northern Europe. Don't have anything to do with the story that we attach to it. The story, though, is told in lots of different ways all over the world. And one of those stories in Egypt, thousands of years before the birth of Jesus, is the exact same story as the birth of Jesus. But to them, the sun was a god, and so it was the birth of the sun god, and the story in Christmas is the birth of the son of God. But the stories are parallels. It's really fascinating how human beings have managed to take that same story and tell it in different ways. I look at it and realize that in cultures where life was really hard, especially when it was cold and dark, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't grow. They didn't do much hunting. Everybody was basically indoors. The darkest night basically was the moment where, if the cycles of nature worked the way they always do, then the days would start getting longer and things, life would start to warm up again and life would continue. But there was always the possibility in that pre-scientific way of looking at things that, however they looked at the gods or nature or anything else, that things would just not work. And it would stay dark, and it would get darker and darker, and the sun would go out, and life would end. So the celebration was saying, we're still here. We're happy we're here. We're taking care of each other. We're creating a warm place in the darkest, coldest night. And besides, it's a good excuse for a party. And people do that all over the world at this moment. So this is a wonderful evening to celebrate. Whichever of the many holidays you celebrate, I honor your holiday and your way of celebrating it and hope you have a wonderful time. Merry everything and happy always. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Eid, and all the other ones that I don't even think of off the top of my head. Let's all celebrate the change of the seasons. So, part of my celebration of the change of the seasons and this last show for this year is hanging out with Chick. And Chick Weatherby lives in New Hampshire. I met him a while ago, and I'm happy to introduce him to you. So, Chick, you there?
Yes, I am, David.
So, we had a great time talking, and I find your path into all this work absolutely fascinating because you, first of all, you're a geek like I am. You have a technical background. You worked in electronics, and you had a landscaping business, and you did that kind of work. And then you got into herbalism, and then you became a naturopathic physician. And then there's another fascinating story about how you moved in another direction. So just take us back to those days of yesteryear and tell us how you got here.
Well, maybe going back to when I was 5 or 6 years old. This was back when the Second World War was just getting over. And I had two imaginary playmates, Joe and Jim. And they used to come with me everywhere I went. My mother was very understanding about it and put up with it. At least that's the way I thought of it. And I remember one night saying to her, they're coming to dinner. And so we had to set a place for them. And I had three other brothers, so you know, we were pretty filled up there at the table with two empty spaces. And through the dinner, my mother said, "Are they here? Are they here?" And I said, "No, they couldn't show up tonight. They had other things to do." And through other times when we had lunch or dinner, they never came so that my mother could really meet them. And it wasn't until, I turned 50 that I took a class in with Tom Brown Jr. in New Jersey. And we sat there and we meditated. And all of a sudden, it came to me that Joe and Jim were real. And it blew my mind at 50 years old. Mm-hmm. I went, wow, they were real. And since 50, I have been looking for them. They have not come back to me. And growing up through high school, I always knew I had some sort of power, but it was nothing that was special to show off or anything like that. I could make people trip. And I used to do this as a parlor trick. I remember that my parents and I went out to eat one time, and the waiter was coming over with water. And I turned to my mother, and I said, "Watch this." And he got almost to the table, and he just tripped as if there was something in front of him, and the water went all over the place. And my mother looked at me very sternly and says, "Chick, that's not very nice."
But so much fun.
Right. And I never put any connection to it with spiritualism or anything out there. It was just the way I lived, you know. And I wasn't a trickster, so I didn't really use it all the time. But it was something that was there. And I remember, again, seeing what we would call a ghost. And I was 4 years old at the time. And my mother, I found out later, had seen the ghost in the house. His name was K.M. Gray. And one night, my mother remembered that she had forgotten to put the gate across the upstairs stairway. And she came running around the corner, and there I was at the bottom of the stairs, just sitting there. And she said, "How did you get here?" And I said, "The man brought me down." And I don't remember him. And this is a story that she told me, that the man brought me down. So I've had, in my life, many, many touches with spirits, being able to see into the future and things like that. I look at it as being nothing different. In fact, when I was talking to your producer, he said he was looking for a bio on me, and my answer was, I stay under the radar. I don't need a bio on the internet out there.
And people find you.
They find me, right. And that's not ego speaking. I have people that will walk right into my store and say, "I need this help. Can you help me?" And I say, "Well, I'll try." So it's I do not promote myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you do have the health food store in Amherst, New Hampshire.
Yeah,
just not Amherst, Massachusetts, where I live.
Yeah. Right, the other Amherst,
2 hours north.
Right.
And you do your healing work in your office there.
I do.
When people find you.
Right, I do. I do iridology. I also, you know, as you know, you can look at a person and read their etheric and know a lot about them. And a lot of people who come to see me don't know this. Don't know that I'm looking at them that way,
right?
Or because they go running. Because I'm here, I want to help. I don't need the when I was learning Native American healing things. I often say I don't wear feathers because I don't want people to know what I'm doing.
Right.
But I'm here to help. And, you know, growing up, I went away from it. I got married when I was 23, really too young, but when I was 23 and went for the American dream. And we were talking about that today at work and how I had two children, a house, two cars, and a wife and a dog. And all of a sudden, I looked at myself one day and said, "What am I doing?" And, well, I'm not married to that woman anymore. I see her often, but we just didn't make it. It wasn't the right thing. And the American dream wasn't there. It was something else. And I really didn't find it until it didn't become really clear to me until I was about 50 years old. And that was... It's in 1990 I became 50. And it wasn't then that I looked back on my past, and it was like dominoes coming together instead of falling, just coming together. And I went, wow, this, that. And everything else in my life, which many times I look at it and it overpowers me to think about it. And again, I throw out, I am no one special, absolutely no one special. And what I do, I teach. I can teach almost anyone the same thing, but you have to have the passion for it. You have to know where you're going and you have to live it. Because if you can't live it, it's like the person who goes to church every Sunday and then downgrades everyone the rest of the week. You can't do that. You have to live it. That has to be you for all that time. And that's,
so,
yeah.
Well, I'm just curious, which of the many modalities that you do came first? Was it the herbalism? Was it getting the naturopathic degree?
Well, the naturopathic degree started back in 1986, and it was when the government was, and they're still trying it, was trying to put vitamins on prescription status.
Right.
And so my thought process said, well, what I'll do is I'll become a doctor, because for you to buy 60 milligrams of vitamin C won't do anything for you. So if you come in, I can write you a prescription as we're standing there talking, and you can get what you want in a vitamin, even though the law says you have to go to a doctor. You're there. I'm here. Because if it had gone through, eating an orange, you would be overdosing. But needless to say, they did. They knocked it down. And back in Congress today, right now, they're battling it out right now, trying to put it back on prescription status. About every 6 to 8 years, it comes back, which is scary.
Well, there's now an international standard that the UN is trying to put through, too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, we don't need that. So everybody out there, call your congressman and tell them no. But that's how I started out, because I was doing it as a service to my customers. And I got my degree in naturopathic medicine, and people just started coming in to see me. Can you help me here? Can you help me there? And I'll do my best. And from there, things started. Backing up, when I was in college and took landscape architecture, I had to know all sorts of plants. And that was really interesting for me, because all of a sudden I realized that plants heal. And from that, I started reading some off-the-wall books, as some people were putting it at the time. But I realized that you could talk to plants, you know, that you can go in and the plants have etheric, and you can feel their energy, and they can talk to you. They don't speak English. They speak, because I remember I did talk to a plant, one of my first times I sat in the woods to a plant that I did not know. And I sat there, and because I wanted to know what its medicinal properties were. And I sat there, and nothing came, and, you know, and I talked to it verbally to it. And I said to it, I said, "And what are you? What are you?" And in my mind, it came out, "How should I know, dummy? You're the one that speaks your language." And I went, "Wow." And so I sat there for a whole week, not a constant week, but every time I got time, I would go and sit with this plant. And I said to it, eventually, I started getting pictures, and I wrote pictures down. And I said to the plant, I said, "I'm a dummy. I have these pictures, but they don't make any sense to me." And so at the end of the week, I got up and I met this person who had told me to sit in the woods. And I met him and I said, "I've got pictures. I have feelings from this plant, but I don't get it." He says, "Well, go to the library and look up such and such a plant." And I went to the library and I looked it up, and that was my plant. Mm. And I went, "Wow." And I went down to medicinal properties, and it helped with childbirth. And the picture I had drawn was a cornucopia with a human being in it.
Mm.
And so it blew me away at it. And I've done it many, many times. Plants will tell you what their medicinal properties are and whether they're poisonous or not. I don't advise anyone to go out and pick up a plant and say, ooh, are you poisonous or not? It doesn't work that way. In fact, anytime I do that, I always run to a book and look up the plant just to make sure it's true. And usually if I'm calm enough and void enough when I'm with the plant, it's usually right. And it's amazing how it works.
Yeah, I have one friend who's a plant whisperer.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to live in California, and we'd be chatting, and I'd say, by the way, what's going on with the plant in my window? You know, the guy that looks like this, because she had visited one time.
Yeah.
And it looks like this. Oh, poor guy turned his leaves over. He's got mites. I was like,
ooh.
Okay. You know, she, her shamanic skill, her way of communicating with nature included being able to get that kind of information very directly from the plants.
Yeah.
With no, you know, non-local experience, like most of these things, time and space are not involved.
Right.
I've had a few, most of my experiences with plants have been with trees.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I get what you're saying.
With trees, I take my students into the woods, and usually I'll find a pine forest where every tree is the same, because I don't want them to be confused. And I have them blindfolded, and I have them go in, and they put their hands by the tree, and I ask them to feel the energy or the magnetism, and you can feel it if you get in close enough without touching the tree. And when you feel that the end part of the magnetism, you go in just a hair, and you say to the tree, what is your name? And every time, the tree will give you a name. And this one lady that I was working with, this pine forest we were in, she said the first time, she says, I can feel something, but I don't get a name. So we went to another tree, and she says, Carlos. I got Carlos as a name. I said, okay, this is Carlos. And I said, take your blindfold off and look at the tree. And we went to a couple others, and she went to one. She was South American.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to another one, and then we went to another one, and she came in, and she said, oh, this is Rosita. I feel. And so I says, well, look at Rosita. So she took the blindfold off, and we sat down after for about, 15, 20 minutes. And I said, okay, we're not finished. We still have to identify some more trees. And I took her back to Rosita. She was blindfolded. I took her mm-hmm. back to Rosita, and she came up, and she put her hands near the tree, and she shook her head, and she put her hands back in. She came back three or four times. She shook her head no, and I said, Sandra, what's the matter? And she says, well, this can't be right, because this tree is telling me her name is Rosita. And I said, take off your blindfold. And she cried. She cried when we did this.
Yeah.
And anybody can do it. It's one of those. Yeah. It's just being able. You have to believe, and it isn't a believing in something that isn't there, because it really is there.
Right. Hey, we're going to need to take a break.
Okay.
And then we're going to continue our conversation. But also, people can call in and join the conversation and ask questions. That number is 248-809-3474, and I'll give that again when we get back from the break. And I'm fascinated with your stories, partly because they're so parallel to a lot of my experiences. So it's a lot of fun hearing someone else tell their shamanic journey. So we will be back in just a moment here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Come on back and continue our conversation with Chick Weatherby.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Victor Ray, this is Scorpion 23, traveling west on MSR Vernon. Four Victors, 16 packs, request MSR status, over. Roger, Scorpion 23, all MSRs and AOR red past 24 hours, 3 IEDs on MSR Vernon.
Victor X-ray, this is Scorpion 23, one Victor hit by IED at grid. Mike Bravo, 310-737, this is small arms fire. Request QRF and medevac at this location, over.
In war, there will always be casualties. And for our wounded warriors, coming home can sometimes be a battle in itself. American troops who suffer traumatic injuries need the support of every American. Join us and send your message of support to our wounded warriors and their families at USO.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We've been married 38 years. We're retired, and this is how we live united.
We play golf and we travel, but we also decided we were going to give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
I do the nursing at the clinic.
I work the front office, checking in patients, greeting them, making them feel comfortable.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places. The places that need it most and implement it best.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement, too.
We even get a few bless yous. It's incredible.
We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic, so we don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Now back to the Farkas Files on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Chick Weatherby. Who was telling us a fascinating story about teaching people to communicate with trees. I know a lot of your expansion into this work came out of that workshop you did with, what was his name, John Brown?
Tom Brown. Tom Brown Jr.
And that was a tracking workshop. That was not presented as a psychic skills workshop.
Right.
So right. this was skills for tracking animals in the woods.
Right. It started out, he has he teaches approximately 30 classes. And the first one, which is called a standard class, takes in survival, tracking. And when I first went there, I went there just to learn tracking. And how I got there is an interesting story also. In my store, I had a lady come in and say, "Do you have a Tom Brown tracker book?" And I said, "No, I don't." And she said, "Well, you should carry it." I said, "Okay." And the next week she came in and she says, "Have you gotten in Tom Brown's tracker?" And I said, "No." And this went on for about a month. And I finally said to my wife, who was ordering books at that time, Would you please get this book in so we can shut this person up? So we got the book in, and she came in like the next weekend, and I said to her, "We got your book." And she said, "What book?" I said, Tom Brown Tracker. And she said, "Oh, I don't want it. I want you to read it." And I just thought, okay, all right, I will read it. And from there, after reading the book and passing the book on to a friend of mine, and she came in and said, "I'm going to go down and take his first class." And I said to my wife, that Maggie was her name, and I said, "Maggie's going down to take the class." And my wife said, "Why don't you take it with her?" And that was 1990, and from then, I've taken probably 26 of the classes, and I've helped out at the school. And I remember sitting in the class, and he was talking, and I remember him saying, "And we want to thank the Creator for this." And I remember sitting there saying, "Oh, God, they're bringing God into it. I don't want this." Little did I know how much it would affect me.
Yeah.
And from there, he held philosophy classes. And Tom met a Apache shaman in the Pine Barrens in New Jersey when he was 8 years old.
Wow.
And he was known as Stalking Wolf and Grandfather. And Stalking Wolf taught Tom for 10 years everything he knew, because Grandfather was a shaman, and he had nobody to pass it on to. Nobody in his tribe really wanted it. And he went to the elders, and the elders said, "You will be teaching a white man." And they just happened to meet, and there's no happens, but they happened to meet in the Pine Barrens. And he taught Tom tracking. He taught Tom time travel. He taught Tom how to read people, everything that you have read or have seen in the movies, the fantastic things that you see the Native Americans doing, is true, and Tom teaches it.
Cool.
But you have to put in the dirt time, as he says. It isn't something you take a weekend class and come out of it. And that's one of the things about that gets me when people will take a shamanistic course and they come out of a weekend course and say, "Well, I am one."
Right.
you need a lot. I usually step back from them when they say that to me.
Right.
Because, right. Yes.
No, and people come to me and say, "I want to do what you do." And I say, "Well, start 30 years ago."
Yep.
Find a couple of shamans to work with, apprentice for a few years, do a lot of strange stuff, and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
because
I can't start them at the end.
Right.
There's all this preliminary stuff. I want to give that phone number out again so people can call and join the conversation. That number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Give us a call. Ask us some fascinating questions and join the conversation. There in all spiritual work, there are lots of people who are just starting out and have a new skill and something to experiment with, and they get some results and think they've mastered it.
Right.
And of course, the universe in its inimitable way will whack them in the behind so that they will figure out how little they know. But there are far more people who are beginners than there are people who are masters. And that's part of why I love doing this show, is I can get master practitioners on here to tell what it really takes and to show people that it's a path and it's a way of life, and it doesn't happen overnight. Even if you knew it like you did when you were a child, it wasn't until much later in life that you integrated it and figured out how to work with it.
It became my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I meditate while I'm driving.
Right.
You know, I don't recommend anyone to do it, but that's when I get most of my meditation done. And,
yeah, I was on a long drive at one point, and you get in that meditative state, and suddenly I knew what all the cars on the road were going to do, what was happening around the bends in the road, and you know all those things that happen when you're in that state. But I was in that state for hours on this trip. It was really strange but exciting.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. As I say to a lot of the people who come to me, you're driving down the road and you're traveling at 50 miles an hour, and you go past a 35 mile an hour sign, and you don't let off the gas, and you just keep going, and all of a sudden you come around a corner, and for some reason you take your foot off the accelerator, and right around the corner there's a policeman with a radar gun, and you go right through it. There was a place before that corner where you have to go back to and think of what happened. There was some place there that there wasn't someone that said, take your foot off the accelerator. It was just a feeling that you got, and you just took your foot off the accelerator. That's where you start to read the signals that you get from the spiritual world and to become aware.
Right. And that's one of the key things that most people have a lot of preconceptions about. Everybody thinks being psychic is the glamorous stuff, being able to see things and hear things and getting great detail and being told exactly what's going on. And there are extremely few psychics who have that level of extended senses. And I know a few people that have that on a level, and it's one of them I call RoboCop. You know, she's getting so much visual input and so much auditory input. I really don't understand how she functions walking down the street, because she gets so much data.
Yeah.
But most people are getting stuff all the time, and a lot of it is a feeling in the body or a random thought that drops into your head. And until somebody shows you that that's your way of getting your information and teaches you how to work with it, you just blow it off as kind of weird stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When I first started meditating in a group, I remember people would meditate and they'd come out and they'd say, oh, I saw this big Indian. He came to me and he spoke to me. Or this white buffalo came in. I'm exaggerating. but all of this stuff. And I'm sitting there going, I didn't get crap. I didn't get anything, And so I remember sitting with one of the instructors one day, and I said, all these people are seeing things and everything else. And he said to me, he said, it comes in feelings. He says, you have to think of the feelings that you're getting. He says, I mention your wife to you, and you get a feeling. He says, I mention your child to you, and you get a feeling. You don't picture them. You just get a feeling of them.
Right.
And he said, can you describe your mother to me? My mother had passed when I was 26. Mm-hmm. And I went, boy, I really can't. He says, no, but you still get that same feeling, right? I said, yes. He said, you would know her if she walked into the room today. I said, yep. He says, that's what your meditation is. Pick up on those feelings. That's the way they're communicating with you. And from that time on, it was, whoopee, someone put the car in gear.
Right, and it's especially interesting when you get bits and pieces from different extended senses.
Yep.
For me, I see better with my eyes closed.
Uh-huh.
Yep, yep.
And I see better if I have my hand up scanning whatever I'm trying to look at. So it took a while to figure those out. But if you tell someone that I can see something, they think I'm seeing it with my eyes open in, you know, in the world, which yep. occasionally happens.
Oh, it does.
That happens. Yeah. It doesn't happen all the time. Or I can see where something is and I get a feeling about it, or I hear a word or whatever it is. But it's a combination of different inputs, which you need to learn to understand and then also learn how to interpret and how to bring them to you.
Yep.
And but you know, the other thing, and it'll be interesting to see if your experience is the same, and I'm thinking we should give the number out one more time. And that call in number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Give us a call. So for me, when I started doing this work, and I started realizing that I was getting stuff in a lot of different ways, the question was, how do you sort it out and what's relevant and how do you fit it all together? And part of the intensity of that is trying to help people because you want to give them information that you want. And for me, I realized that my skill is cleaning things up, is clearing things, resetting things, getting rid of problems, not giving people a reading, mm-hmm. you know, not necessarily giving them a data right. download. And there's yeah. a lot of people that are really good at giving folks data downloads, and there's lots of tools to work with that.
Yeah.
And I realized it just that wasn't what I was here for. I was here to do the more shamanic stuff, doing cleanup of old issues and historic issues and doing healing work. And once I let go of that, trying to give accurate information, I was able to do what, you know, my skill is. And it takes a while for people to figure out what their skill is and what they're here to do.
Right. Yeah, yeah, I get people that come in and say, you know, tell me my future. Tell me what I'm going to do. And I just right. say to them, I cannot interrupt your life. You have to live your life. It will come. Well, am I going to be rich? You are rich right now. No, I mean money. Well, I can't say that. That's a material thing.
Right.
You know, and in with my classes, you know, anybody can become invisible. And with the sensing that I do, I always say, you know, I'm going to give you the first three steps of 10, how to become invisible. And there are people that say to me, can I find this online? Can I find the other seven steps to become invisible? They want to go to the end, you know?
Right.
And you have to work at it. You have to right. work at it. And the first three will make them invisible. Only they won't take it.
Right. I figured out enough of it. It'll be interesting, not on the show, but at some other point, to talk more about invisibility. But I got to the point where I could do it on the street and people would walk into me.
Yep.
And they'd say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
Yeah.
You know, and I realized pretty quickly that you really have to turn that off when you cross the street.
Yeah. Or driving in your car. Because
right.
the car becomes invisible. I like to walk up to automatic doors. And in the right, if I'm in the right frame of mind and everything, I can walk up to them and tap on them before they open. And I do that. I don't let people know I'm doing it. I just do it for my own practice.
Right.
You know.
Well, the first time anybody suggested that for vehicles was a friend of mine who's a dowser, and she said, you know, you can just put a field around your car, an intention field that says that law enforcement can't see your car.
Right.
And she got into a fender bender. Called 911
yeah.
and watched the local sheriff's car go back and forth three times not noticing her before she went. Oh, man. And she, as soon as she took the field down, the guy came back again and went, I was just, you weren't, you know, he could not figure
right.
out what happened. So I then changed what I said to extremely noticeable for safety, but not noticeable for law enforcement.
Yep.
So
yeah,
you
do have
literally
to
won't be on their radar. Yeah. They won't ever think of looking at me for anything.
Right.
You know, I also put up no mischief fields. You know, it's not my problem that you want to do some weird thing. You're not going to do it with me.
Right. Yeah.
Go find someone else to mess with. You're not going to do it with me. So there's a guy that I read about in Australia who makes a living putting up intention fences to keep out kangaroos and koalas from gardens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He just, you know, goes to the place, does whatever his process is to put up a perimeter around it, and they don't cross it.
Yeah.
So there are people all over the world doing theme and variations on this kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, we do in at the tracker school. We just call them bubbles, and you can break wind and fill the bubble full of gas, and you just set it someplace. You know, and you watch people come in, they sit down, or you put it in a chair, so when they sit in it, they break the bubble. And, you know, they sit down, all of a sudden they're going, oh, what is that smell, you know? And just things that you do from away, you know. But
right.
The Native Americans did it because what they would do, and a lot of the bubbles are still out there, is that they would put paranoia or fear into them. So if you were tracking them, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you'd feel them all around you, and they're still walking away from you. Only you are wasting, you know, 15, 20 minutes trying to find out where they are.
Right.
You know, and, but you can have fun with it. You can have fun with it as long as you're not making a party game out of it, or you're using your ego.
Right.
Because it's all to learn.
I've seen a lot of ego games go back and forth between various kinds of practitioners to the point where some of them had psychic bodyguards to fend off other people, you know, doing things just to show off and show them, I'm better than you are. See what you do with this.
Yeah, right. You can get into trouble that way, but you can also have fun.
Right, right. You know, there are still people that I haven't seen for years and years and years who will show up as insects or animals or assorted other things. You know, suddenly there's a spider coming down on a single thread of web, you know, to right in front of my face.
Yeah.
And I just look at it and go, oh, hi, Barbara. What's up? Am I supposed to call you?
Yep.
So that's the only time it happens.
Yeah. The other is make sure that you always walk in reverence.
Yes.
It isn't that you let other people know it. It's all personal to you. This whole thing is personal to you. It isn't something to show anyone, as we've just said with the ego. But you walk in reverence, but be light. Always. I mean, you have a fantastic sense of humor. I have a sense of humor, and that's the way I get it across most of the time. But it's all done in reverence.
Yes, and that's got nothing to do with the skills or the experiences or any of the rest of it. It's just got to do with how you are in the world.
How you are, yes. Back being personal.
Yeah. The other thing, we have a few minutes left, and I wanted to run this by you and see your experience with it. A lot of spiritual practice, a lot of meditation practice and psychic skills training and all the rest of it is about getting out of your body, having an experience out of your body.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, you know, going exploring on the astral plane or having some incredible meditation experience. And in my experience, all the important stuff happens when you're grounded and in your body.
Right.
And that's where the power is. That's where the protection, if you need it, is. That's where you can actually learn. And so I always found it ironic and kind of funny when, you know, people are doing things that are not grounded and getting them out of their body. And I'm like, yeah, so when you learn to stay in your body, we'll be able to do some work. But as long as you're out there, mostly I'm going to have to clean up your first chakra and get you back in your body.
Yeah, right. Go ahead.
Well, it's just most nature-based work, you know, most of the indigenous healing work is about grounding, is about being present.
And staying, because most of us, and we all should be doing this, most of us live in the etheric, just the just outside of your body. That's where mostly everything comes from and goes from. And you can pick anything up from there. And that's where you stay grounded, right there. And you can bring anyone into that. That's when the Native Americans would shapeshift or become invisible. Primarily what they were doing is expanding their etheric, bringing it over a tree or over a deer or over an object. And they become that object. You can become that object.
Right.
And
which, for people who have no idea about this stuff, just sounds like stuff from creepy movies.
Right.
But, you know, when you've experienced it or you've seen someone else do it, it's like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
This is real.
Yeah, it is real. It's not a parlor trick.
Well, and that's part of Native American and other indigenous stuff, is that it's all very grounded, very real, nuts and bolts, learned from somebody who knows how.
Yeah.
Not from a book, not from a workshop, that kind of thing. It's very, very different kind of way of being. So we've got a few minutes. I want to make sure people know how to find Earthward, your store.
Yeah.
So give them a little idea how they can find you.
Okay, we're in Amherst, New Hampshire on Route 101A. It's 42 Route 101A. It's Earthward Natural Foods and Co-op. We've been there for 37 years. My wife started the store, and when I came out of electronics, I went to work there for her, and she's moved on to another store, and I'm running her store, and she's running my store. But
funny how those things happen.
Yes, stop in and say hi, because we're always friendly, and all of the people who work there are very, very knowledgeable, because anytime anyone comes to work for me, I have them follow me for a week just around. And if they have a question that they don't know, and they come and ask me what will this do for them, customer has a question on what this will do for them, I say, come with me. And usually by the end of 3 months, they're as knowledgeable as me.
Right. So you're doing the same thing in the store as you do in other trainings.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. A person who has all the knowledge is a person who wants control. I don't want control.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Chick. We could keep talking, and we can.
I know.
You can be on the show again, and we can keep talking.
Okay.
I want people to know how to find me, which is at househealing.com. And all my contact information is cleverly hidden where it says contact, and you click on that, and it's all there. So we will not have a live show next week. Enjoy your holidays, and have a wonderful new year, and we will be back in the new year and we will have another session of the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere, here on Empower Radio. Have a great New Year's.